speed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Mo Abdelbakian. Today is April the 3rd. Oh, no, it isn't. April the 2nd of 2025. It's only April the 2nd. It's Wednesday, April the 2nd of 2025. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I hope you're having a wonderful week. It's not April 1st, so I can't say April Fools. No, I can't say that. I was never a big fan of April Fool's Day, and even though I did pull some pranks, I'm not a prankster. I've never liked pranking. I've always found it to be extremely annoying. Extremely annoying, just so you know. And I've known entire families who enjoyed pranking, and they did lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of pranking, and I always just found it completely irritating. You know, they would do things like, I'm not going to get into it, but just truly, really horrendous things. You think, why do they do this stuff? And the answer is, I don't know. I'm not sure. They, ha, 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 you know. Ha, ha, ha. But if you're into it, well, God bless you. I've never found it to be that hilarious. La poisson d'avril, you know. That's what the French call it, the April fish. Believe it or not, that fits right into the fool in many ways. And that's kind of a cool thing, the fool and la poisson d'avril. I don't think it's le, I think it's la, 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 la. Live for today. God, I had the strangest dream, not last night, but the night before. I was awakened, not awakened, it's that early morning, you know, that early morning thing where you're not yet awake, but you're dreaming, and it was a cycle, it was over and over again. I was listening to Scarborough Fair, the old song. Well, it's an old song, it's like from the 1600s, I think I read that the earliest rendition they could find was 1607, and it's an old English song, and, you know, are you going to Scarborough Fair, you know, that sort of thing, and lovely song. I never paid much attention to it at the time. I always thought, well, that's, you know, pretty enough. 1966 is when Simon and Garfunkel sang it, made it very popular, incredibly popular. Scarborough Fair, Canticle. And I really didn't, it wasn't, you know, it was kind of a love song sort of thing. And all these years, all these 60 years almost, 44 years, 48 years, 40, 50, 100, 8, 11, 12 years, I haven't paid that much attention to it. But in the dream, it was going over and over and over again. I kept thinking, my God, this is a lovely song. This is a really beautiful song. And I thought, how wonderful that such a turbulent time could produce such a beautiful song, especially for a war song, you know, an anti-war song. And I thought, wait a minute, that's not an anti-war song. It's a love song. And I thought, no, it is an anti-war song. And I thought, no, it isn't. Then I thought, yes, it is. And so I awoke and I was confused. Like, what the heck? Because I'd never really paid, honestly, not that much attention to it. I mean, I just wasn't that, you know, I was into other kinds of music. Yeah, I really was. And so I looked at the lyrics, and sure enough, there in the lyrics, there is this scathing denouncement of war in there. And I thought, I wonder how many people know that. Well, my wife knew it right away, because she had spent hours listening to it and deciphering the words of that song. She was in high school at the time. I hadn't been born yet. No, that's not true. I was certainly born. But she knew all the words, and she had known that was what it was about. Well, I don't know if that's what it's about, but... And, of course, Paul Simon had added those words. And I guess that's what the song does, is that you just add words along as you go, every generation. Or I'm not sure if that's exactly right, but it amazes me that we have these thoughts. So I'd heard the words, the subsonic substriping or whatever you want to call it, just the words that were beneath the exterior of the song that ran in a, you know, not conscious way. And it was there. And all these years, and I think I must have been thinking about the ridiculous aspect of the world and the fact that there has not been really a time of peace for mankind in a long time. And so in my dream, it was like, wow, especially for an anti-war song, it's so pretty. But anti-war songs have a tendency to be pretty. Like, Where Have All the Flowers Gone? It's a beautiful song. I believe Pete Seeger wrote that. Now, I may be wrong. Maybe that was Dylan. I don't know. I'm not sure, and I'm not going to look it up. I'll just err on the side of errors, you know. A lot of songs that are against violence, a lot of songs that are against intolerance, have a tendency to be beautiful because they are from the heart and they are from a sense of wanting peace. And they deliver a real pathos. And they don't do much for Aramis or for Athos or, you know, D'Artagnan, but they do deliver pathos. So there you are. I don't know. It was strange. And it made me think a lot about what goes on inside of us. What goes on those substrata that we don't pay really much attention to, but are there, that are definitely there, and are dynamic and really take their toll if we don't keep track of them. I haven't been meditating the way I used to. I haven't been meditating the way I can. And I wonder why. And I'm not sure if it's to keep up with the stress level of society so I can deal with the other things that people are feeling. I don't know. I mean, there really should be. I mean, I think I would feel better. I love to meditate. I love the way it feels. I love the thoughts that come in and out. And I have the ability to kind of make a note and say, okay, make a note of this. And if it's not important, it goes away. If it is important, I kind of hold on to it. But some very important ideas have come through during meditating, or meditation, or blah, blah, blah. But it's a good thing. But there are times, I think, when oh, it always helps. I don't know who I'm kidding. But for some reason, I just haven't been doing it. It's like I want to be in tune with this particular high buzz that's going on right now. There is a definite high buzz happening, and I feel like I want to stay in tune with it. So maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's kind of weird. But I do like to stay in touch with whatever is happening. A lot of changes going on. A lot of changes. I don't know if you feel it. I certainly feel it. I do. One of the things that I think is detrimental is anger and hostility. And one of the worst emotions of all, one of the worst things that can come about is vengeance. People who seek revenge, dirty tricks, those types of things. I had a neighbor who was not a very, in my opinion, just my opinion, not a very nice guy. He was a hard fellow to live next door to simply because he was constantly doing nasty things. And it was difficult to keep an open mind about him and difficult to deal with some of the things that he did. They were just incredibly malicious and childish, and some of them were felonies, you know? They really were. There were plenty of misdemeanors, and some of them were out-and-out felonies. He was careful. He was hard to deal with because I didn't have that kind of mind. I tried to outwit him a couple of times, but I realized, and he was not a genius by any stretch of the imagination, but it's like you can't outfox a fox, because a fox is a natural being who has its intelligence in nature. So it takes a lot of real deep knowledge of natural law to be able to outwit a fox. I mean, you just don't come off right off the bat and do it. There's a baseball which starts in 2 days. Baseball here in Colorado. Why'd I mention that? No idea. It was just came to my mind. I don't even go to games anymore or anything else. Just thought I'd bring it up for those of you who like the sound of the crack of a baseball off a bat. There you go. But he was just, and so you, I tried, but I don't have that mind, you see. So there's something about that person who constantly seeks to do something, because he constantly felt wronged. He constantly felt wronged for things that indeed were not wrongs. It was just a matter of, you want to do this, you can't, it's not your property, or this isn't going to work. So boundaries were a problem, you know, I mean, just social boundaries. And he also didn't like some things about me that I couldn't help, like, oh, the fact that I had a last name that annoyed him. Or my ethnicity, which really upset him. His perception of my perhaps my religion. Now, if I had told him what I actually believe, he probably would have, you know, hurled himself into a volcano, which would have been fine with me. I'm kidding. I wouldn't want that on anyone. And that's another thing, you know, our thoughts. But one of the worst things, like I said, is that of the concept of revenge. We live in a society today that seeks revenge much too much. Much too much. Now, this is nothing new. Nothing new at all. I was actually thinking about this, and I was writing about it this morning. I like to write longhand, and I like to use fountain pens, because you have to be a lot more careful with a fountain pen. And I like to write it longhand in fountain pen and watch my handwriting, because I like to take care in it and make it look as nice as I can. Why? Because there is a different process between the brain and the hand that comes when you take care and attempt to make it aesthetically pleasing than happens any other time. It's just something I've discovered. You may find it different. If, for example, when I write something in shorthand, it's very different than it is when you do it in longhand and attempt to... And I'm not talking calligraphy. Calligraphy is something altogether different. Anyway, I'm getting off track. The mind fascinates me. The mind fascinates me. My mind is actually kind of vacuous and pretty much boring, I think. I can see people's eyes glass over when I'm talking about my obsessions, my fascinations. But the mind in general fascinates me because our minds are incredibly complex. And one of the things that always interests me is revenge. Now, we live in a society right now that is pretty much hep on revenge. As a matter of fact, I think certain aspects of our government right now are revenge-based. People trying to get back at other people for things that they perceive were done, which in fact may or may not have been done. And so you think, wow, what a premise. Now, let me just for a second, bear with me. I'm a fan of Moby Dick by Herman Melville, which is a really wonderful book. It's very strange. Beautiful writing, an incredible use of the English language. Melville was a customs officer, you know, I think in New York. And he and Nathaniel Hawthorne were really good friends. But the point is that he was an incredible writer. He knew how to weave a tapestry of language that was just fantastic and unbelievably rich. At least I think that. I've often been reading through Moby Dick, and I will read the same paragraph, 20, 30 times, just because it's so wow. It's just, wow, you just go, my goodness, what a way to write something. I remember I once read one page over and over and over and over again just because it was so incredibly stunning to me. It was just brilliantly written. And you go through the book and it's a lot of it is like that, at least to me. But the point of Moby Dick is that you've got this fella, and I'm just synopsizing here, if you don't know the story, there may be some spoilers. But you've got this fella named Captain Ahab. And Ahab is a one-legged sea captain of the Pequod. And the Pequod is, interestingly enough, an extinct tribe at that point. And I think that's pretty interesting. It's owned by Quakers. So it's like, wait a minute, do Quakers, are they whalers? This is a whaling ship. And the image of the whaling ship itself is a little bit horrific because it's decked out in whale parts like teeth and bones. And there's something truly grotesque about that. And Melville does this on purpose. The book itself is without any doubt whatsoever, anti-whaling. You get that. You get that in absolute clear neon signs. It's just like, wow, this is so barbaric. And I do believe he felt that. I really do. When you read it, it's like, holy mackerel, this is terrible. And all the best harpoonists in this book are, well, I'm going to use the term, let's just say non-Christian. They're non-Christian. So we look at this, and Ahab is the captain of the ship, and he's very mysterious in the beginning. You don't really see him until, you know, you're a few chapters in, and there's something stony and ice cold about him. But it's obvious at one point that he is bent on vengeance against Moby Dick, who took his leg. On the first voyage that he met Moby Dick, he gets thrown into the water. They talk about it, and Moby Dick just very, almost accidentally, severs his leg, you know, with his teeth. He just kind of happens to be in the water, and Moby Dick just cuts his leg off. And he goes mad as they have to strap him in a hammock. And he was a harpoonist, by the way. Or is it harpooner? Well, harpooner, harpoonist, that's fine. Let's call the whole thing off. But let's not. Let's keep on with this. And so he goes mad on this voyage, supposedly, as he's, strapped into this hammock with his severed leg. And supposedly, but it's this hatred that sets in, this deep-set hatred. We learn that he's got, at some point, that he's got a wife back in, I think, in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and he's basically spent one night with her. That's it. And then he went back out to sea to do more whaling. But eventually, he became the captain. And little do the people who gave him this ship know that the only reason he took this ship out is to get vengeance. his revenge against Moby Dick. And that's it. So he's got this ship of souls on it. And here's the point. He doesn't care what happens to them. He's willing to sacrifice them, himself, and the ship, all so that he can exact his revenge on this force of nature. And here's the point. Let's say something happens to you when you're outside. Let's say, God forbid, an icicle falls off of a gutter and hurts you. It doesn't kill you. It just, let's say, hits you on the shoulder and just really hurts you. It doesn't hurt you like you're crippled, but just say it doesn't injure you that badly, but you develop a hatred for all icicles, and you make it to where every time you see an icicle, you become enraged, and you make it your duty every time you see an icicle to go around with a baseball bat and break every icicle you see, and then you decide it's gutters that are the problem, and you make it your job to go around and start. You see how this becomes? It becomes kind of crazy. It becomes an obsession. And then you decide you want to be against winter itself. Well, the best thing you could do would be to move, let's say, to Boca Raton, you know, or Key Largo. But even then, you're going to be in the path of hurricanes and so on and so forth. You're going to end up hating someone else. Something else. So, because it's very obvious that you can't fight nature. You can't hold a grudge against nature. I mean, I've seen these TV shows, you know, they're in the news, I guess I should call it, where someone goes through a hurricane and they say, are you going to move? They say, no, I'm not going to move. I mean, I've been through three of them and I'm going to stay right here. Or there's a hurricane coming. Are you going to evacuate? Nope, I'm not evacuating. I'm going to stay right here. And you think to yourself, why? Why? But people do that. You can't. Nature is simply what it is. And in fact, the truth is that Moby Dick is a force of nature. So we have these interesting ideas about revenge. And what we can exact our revenge against. And we live in a society where people have this anger, this displaced anger about almost everything that exists anymore. And they want to get back at something. They want to get back at someone. And they blame people and they blame other people and they blame everything. And so there's this real stream of red-hot emotion in almost everything. If you go to the store, I was at the store yesterday, and the price of eggs is unbelievable. I mean, you know, it's like, wow. Now, I can live without eggs, but there are people who need to buy them for whatever they do. They may bake, they may have kids that need to eat them. I mean, who knows? I mean, there are people who need these things. And I'm looking at like $8 a dozen, $6.95 a dozen for certain types. And it's like, oh, and here I live in Colorado where they, by law, they have to be out of cages. They have to be free range, you know. Get along, little doggy. And if I were to walk up to someone and say, whose fault is this? They would tell me it's either Donald Trump's or it's Joe Biden's. And they would be like, well, what about the flu? The bird flu? And who knows? And I don't know that that's the real cause. But there would be someone who would want to blame somebody. And how do you get back at that? I don't know. Why do you need to get back at that? And I think that what we are missing in our society more than anything else is the idea of compassion. Compassion is something that is, well, just doesn't really exist very much. We see it in things like the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, once a year, ding, 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 although the Salvation Army works all year long and does great things. But we see it in things like FEMA. After Hurricane Katrina, my brother lost everything in Katrina. He had just started up a business that was doing pretty darn well. He was a chef, and he was doing very well with it. He had a a warehouse, and he was packaging up foods that he had created, and he was selling it. Chef Happy, his name is Happy, it's his nickname. His name is actually Ehab, which is the Egyptian version of Ahab. And he was, you know, he has two legs, but, you know, anyway. So he was in Metairie in this location, this warehouse that he had, and it got flooded pretty badly. And he had a worker in the warehouse who didn't want to leave. She didn't want to leave because things were there. And he said, get out of there. And she almost didn't make it. Thank goodness she did. But lost everything. Lost everything in his house. Lost everything in his business. And my kid brother lived in a FEMA trailer for 6 months with his two kids. And now he's got four. And three of those are in college right now. God bless them. They're wonderful kids. Wonderful kids. One's in high school. No, she's not in high school yet. She's younger. But anyway, and he lived in a FEMA trailer, he and his family, his wife and his kids, for 6 months. Without that FEMA trailer, I'm not altogether sure what they would have done. And out of a sense of vengeance, it's my belief anyway, because that was something that was said. It was said. That's going away. It's going away. And you think to yourself, well, what would he have done? He had a lot of friends. A lot of friends. So I think probably he would have been okay. But what about the people who didn't have his resources of friends? Because he was a very personable sort of guy. But what happens to all those people, you know, who don't have the incredible network of friends and family? You know, I don't know. I don't know. What's happening now, the division in this country due to this concept of wanting to get back, these two parties that are divided, wanting to get back at each other. What is happening? Where's the compassion? Where's the sense of unity? And compassion for the poor people, the people who are the have-nots. You know, not all incredibly wealthy people are dispassionate. They're not all unfeeling to those who don't have. I've known some pretty wealthy people, and they can feel. It takes a little bit of something to kind of snap them into that place, but boy, I sure a lot of them live in their own world, and that is a world of having to keep up not only with each other, but with their lifestyle. I don't think it's easy. I mean, I frankly don't have a whole lot. I've got a lot more than a lot of people. I think I can say that very accurately and very confidently. And I'm very, very lucky. I've had a very lucky life. And I've earned a lot of that, too. I've worked hard in my life, and I plan to keep working hard until I can no longer work. That's for sure. But the idea is that when we become obsessed with this concept of righting the wrong, well, problems come up. There is that bit from the Bible that says, "Vengeance is mine, I shall repay, saith the Lord," which makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. You know, "Vengeance is mine, I shall repay, saith the Lord." That's a heavy statement. In other words, back off, man. Don't try to do it. Just let, and you see, I have some feelings about that. I've been screwed over many times. Boy, have I been. And it hurts. I'm not going to lie to you. It hurts and it bothers me, but I'm nobody's martyr. I did it sometimes to myself. I've been, you know, ripped off a lot. Ripped off. Just plain ripped off. I actually had a thing on AOL. Oh, gosh, back in the 90s, early 90s. It was a website. AOL hired me. And they hired me for like a pittance, I think. I don't even remember what I was paid. But, I was glad to have it because it was just, the internet was just starting out and I published a little thing every day. It was a horoscope sort of thing. And I don't remember what else. I wrote articles and I wrote an article about leprechauns and Waterford lifted it right off the site. And what I should have done was gotten AOL in on it. I wasn't thinking. I went to Waterford and I said, wait a minute. Because someone said Waterford is using this, Waterford Crystal, the Irish company that makes crystal. And I said, shouldn't you pay me for this? And they said, sue us. Go ahead. Give it a try. I said, well, could you send me a vase? I think my wife would love a vase. And they said, no, we're not going to send you anything. This is out on the internet, and we put your name underneath it, so at least you got that. And they did, and they spelled it right. So I kind of thought, okay. And this was, you know, back in the 90s, early 90s. So I think today, I don't know if anything would happen or not, but that sort of thing, I was plagiarized by a priest who was a student of mine. I had a story that I had written in serial form on this AOL site about Osiris and Set. And it was many, many chapters long. And he said, can I borrow this from you? And I had it as files. And I said, sure. You want to read it? He said, yeah, I would love to read it. So I said, sure. I gave him the files. And he took them and put the name Jesus in for Osiris and put the name Satan in for Set and published them. Had them publish them in an Episcopal paper that he was part of. And they wanted to publish it as a book. They loved it. They loved it. So all he did was replace the names. And he had to say, I can't do that. Because I didn't write, he had to admit to them he didn't write it. And it was like, what in the world are you doing, man? And he had to tell me, look, I plagiarized your thing and it was published. And it was like, okay, what could I do? What could I do? I don't know. He never did tell me if he got paid or not for it. He apologized and I went, oh, okay, all right, you know. I was on a podcast, and the podcast, I was signed a contract, and I did podcasts, and I didn't understand the pay rate, and I never got paid a single penny. I was supposed to get paid parts of pennies. I never got those, and it was fun. I enjoyed doing the podcasts, and I think I did okay, and I hope people got something out of them, but, you know, it was like, over and over and over again. And if I really dwell on that stuff, I think, what sort of sucker am I? And then I think, you know what? I'm not. Because I got to experience it. And I had a really, you know, but you think, so here's the deal. A lot of people would growl and moan and they'd say, oh, I'm a martyr. Oh, me, oh, my. But I'm not the one who is wronged. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Martyrdom, you don't get a thing out of it. You know, you don't get a thing out of being a martyr. It clogs up your psyche. It clogs up everything in your life. If someone accuses you of being a martyr, you just have to say, why would I want that? What do I get from that? Just because maybe you are one. Maybe people keep making your life a living hell. That doesn't mean that you have to be a martyr. All right? Just because someone accuses you of being that way, just because your life doesn't go well, doesn't mean that you have to be one. because you're living your life. I've had some strange things happen to me. Like I said, I've been just weird stuff. Because, honest to God, I'm kind of a nice guy, easygoing guy. And not everybody is. There are people whose desires are a lot stronger than mine. So they have a different set of priorities than I do. And those priorities are further away. They have further vision than I do, you know. I'm not willing to screw anybody else over. I'm not willing to do those things that people do in order to get ahead. I'm just like, neither did my dad. My dad wasn't that way either. He wasn't cutthroat. He was a professor in a university. That was his thing, you know, and he was brilliant. And he didn't see the use of using other people and abusing other people, and nor do I. I love what I do, and I do what I love. And I don't enjoy the obsessive mind that says, I'm going to get back at that person, or I'm going to screw that person over. It's like, you know, every now and then someone will say, why didn't you sue that person, or why don't you sue that person? The statute of limitations is still, you know, and it's like, no. I'm okay. Now, a lot of people, like I said, Mo's kind of a schmuck. Maybe I am a schmuck. By the way, you know what that word means? I'm not going to tell you. Look it up. It's Yiddish, all right? I've known many people who spoke Yiddish quite well. But I'm not going to tell you. Or a schmeckle. You can look that up, too. Or a putz. Look that up, too. It's kind of a one-track mind when you come to those words. But anyway. So the idea is that when you do what I do, a lot of which hinges upon intuition, a lot of which hinges upon analysis, a lot of which it's an art and a science, the minute you begin to harbor feelings of, well, what's going to happen is you're going to clog up the mind that needs to be open to it. Sorry, I didn't turn my phone off. It's getting dings. My grandson had his appendix out yesterday, so I hadn't heard anything, so I sent off a message asking how he was, because no one thinks to tell Papa Mo, but I'm sure he's fine. Otherwise, no news is good news, you know. So, but I think he's doing quite well, so. They do it differently now, laparoscopically. When his dad had his appendix out, it was a very different story. You know, it was almost ready to burst, and the doctor brought it out in a jar, and it was the size of a parsnip, and it was really red. It was just like, oh, my God. But anyway, so we don't want to clog up our heads. Lawsuits. I mean, they are ubiquitous nowadays. You know, it's the, you know, have you been in a car accident? I was in three good ones where none of them were my fault. And I didn't sue anybody. I'm seeing now by these commercials that, man, boy, howdy, maybe I missed the you know, I was going to say missed the bus on that one, but the bus did hit me. and I was on a bus for another one. You know, I'm fine. You go through life. I have whiplash that still bothers. Well, it's just a neck injury. But these things, you know, you live with them. You go on with them. Back pain, that's real. Stuff really does happen. But on the other hand, that's life. You have to decide for yourself. But the anger is something that I think erodes from the inside out. It deteriorates us. I am so tired of anger. So what if what's happening now in this country is the Captain Ahab effect, where we have this someone who was injured in the first White Wailing episode and is so filled with anger, so filled with venom, that what he really wants, or she, or they, or it, or any situation, wants to do is simply get back for the injury that they imagined that was real. and they're willing to take the entire ship down. Well, who does that help? Now, I don't just want to talk about politics, because it can happen in a business, it can happen in a family, in a relationship. It can happen in almost anything, and I've seen it over and over and over again. You know, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. I prefer compassion. And compassion is simply, I had someone say to me just today, said to me, you know, Mo, you are the most easygoing guy I've ever met. And I thought, well, my wife wouldn't say that. I had to make a hysterical call to the vet yesterday. And true, I was hysterical because my dog is, you know, my responsibility. Everything that happens to her is under my watch. So, yeah, I was a lot hysterical. I was very hysterical. But everything's fine. Everything's fine. But, you know, there are some things that you probably should get hysterical about. Your kids, your family, your dog, who is part of the family, the focus of the family, the epicenter of the family. That's the truth. But the concept is that I have found myself at this point in my life not being all that judgmental. Some things I kind of do judge because I consider some things so heinous. Like when you take money away that is needed from people who need the money, when you take the food out of children's mouths, that to me is horrible. Children need to eat, you know. When I was a yo-yo man, yeah, for those of you who don't know, I was a professional yo-yo man in my 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s for a little while. And so I was in Detroit, downtown Detroit, very depressed part of Detroit, poverty-stricken Detroit. And I was in the schools doing yo-yo shows. I was working for the Hormel company. They had a product called Not So Sloppy Joe, Sloppy Joe sauce. And the Hormel company had put me in the wrong demographic. They didn't know what they were doing. And I just went there and I was doing these programs in schools. And I was happy to be there because these poor kids never got any assemblies. And so I was maybe the first assembly they'd had in years. And so I walked in and I did yo-yo tricks and I did science, talked about science and gravity and spinning and, you know, rotation and, you know, all sorts. I had a gyroscope and heard lots of oohing and aahing. And in one school, I had to be escorted out, you know, with teachers with baseball bats, which taught me no more junior high schools, just elementary. But it was fascinating, and it was a lovely experience. But at one school I walked in, and I was introduced to, and these were tough schools. I mean, downtown Detroit. These were tough, tough schools. And this was before a lot of programs had been implemented. I was introduced to a young boy who was in kindergarten, and his little sister, who was allowed, they allowed her to come to school with him every day. And they had a school lunch, breakfast program rather, and a lunch program, but a school breakfast and lunch program. And they would give them food. And she came to school and she ate with him breakfast and lunch. And on the weekends, they would give them some food. And they used to, but they stopped doing that. But I was introduced to them by the principal. And this is young so-and-so, and here is his sister. And he was wearing a little bow tie and a suit jacket, and he was dressed beautifully. And his sister, but it was shabby. I mean, when I say shabby, I mean not that clean. And my heart is tearing out of my chest as she tells me they ate today. And it's Friday, and they won't eat again until Monday. And I said, why not? They said, because the mother at home is a crack addict, and she won't feed them. We used to send them home with food for the weekend, but she would either eat it or sell it, but they didn't get it. And so we can no longer do that. And we used to check up, but it's not safe to do so. So they eat here throughout the week, and we make sure they eat enough before they go home that it will hopefully last until the next day. In my heart. And I, you know, and she said, don't let them see you cry. And I, you know, it was just, it was horrible, horrible for me. Because all I could think of were my two young children at home and everything they had. And I would do anything for them, and I still would do anything for them to this day. And you think about your children, and you think about the people in the world who don't have. And you think about it. And I was grateful for the program that existed, you know, where these kids got at least fed at school, and that's going to go away. And you think, what's wrong? What is this? This is about rage. This is about a group of people somewhere. I don't even know who these people are or how they can imagine that what they're doing is right. And I'm not just saying it's one side. Maybe it happens on the other side too, you know? Or the rights of individuals to be happy. I don't care what somebody looks like. I don't care how they dress. I don't care what gender they identify with. None of that matters to me. I want them to be happy. As long as they don't bother somebody else. Or burning books? Taking books off the shelves? What is that insanity? You know? I mean, what sort of anger do people have that they want to do that or do... Oh, my God. So this clouds the minds of people, good people, good people, and convinces them that they have to do these really sick, insane things to get back at other people. And it doesn't make any sense to me. We need to be compassionate, and we have to open our hearts, and we have to say, I don't get it. I can't even begin to fathom why people do what they do. And it's wrong of me to judge it, other than it's hurting other people. You know, the families of these people who were taken to El Salvador, especially the families of those who were not guilty of being in a gang. You know, there are those. And how horrified they are for their loved ones. We have problems. And most of it could be alleviated if there wasn't a certain level of anger and revenge and hatred. What is this concept of hatred? I mean, if you really want to bother someone, be indifferent toward them. Don't hate them. I mean, why not love people? Why not truly just embrace the idea of others and try and work things out? Why do we have to try and... I just am confused. I'm confused by the way humanity seems to be stuck on these ideas of eradication and punishment of each other. What is going on? I don't know. Maybe it starts with us. Maybe it starts with us. I mean, we certainly have to comment on what comes from our hearts. You know, we have to. We have to be honest with what we believe. We have to be honest. We don't want to be like Ahab and follow the white whale to the very end and take everyone down with us. You know, in the book, there are other captains who have encountered Moby Dick and had problems with him. One guy is from a ship called the Rachel, and he's lost his hand. So he has a, you know, things hooked onto it. One is a like a hatchet. Hatchet. So he can like cut his food and, you know, that sort of thing. And he says, "You don't go after Moby Dick. This is what he did to me." It's like, it's cool. It comes with the territory. It comes with life. We live our lives. Honest to God, I've been through a lot of stuff, and it's easier for me to just sit back and go, that's kind of how it goes. I chose my path. I could have been an academic. I made a couple of mistakes along the way of decisions I made on that path. I didn't do this when I should have done that. I shouldn't have, I didn't, you know. But I'm here now doing what I'm doing. And I don't know how long I'm going to do it, but I love what I'm doing. I love talking to you. I love writing columns. I love podcasting. I love readings, and I love doing all the stuff that I do. It's right for me. Would I have loved being an academic in the publish and perish world? Would I have loved being at the base of some pyramid? I don't know. I've been at the base of the Great Pyramid. It's awe-inspiring, but, you know, sand, heat, not so much, you know. We find ourselves, especially here I am, arguably the last aspect of my life, looking at my mortality, and I really don't have any regrets. None. I like that. I haven't lived my life in anger and hatred and aspects of revenge. And I don't think you should either. You should just kind of sit back and go, okay, I have been doing readings for 50 years. I did them before that, but seriously, you know, 50 years. And so many people have really hurt themselves. Fighting, 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 fighting. Anger, 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 anger. My ex did this. My ex did that. Or I'm going to sue this person in business and sue that person in business. And you know what? Sometimes maybe they deserve it. They deserve to be sued. They deserve to do this. They deserve to do that. But for goodness sake, if it's a business thing, then yes, you need to get what's yours. Get what's right. Make the balance sheet of life proper, you know. But don't let it eat you away. Because the truth is that let me be very clear. I have let things eat me up in the past. There are certain people that have gotten under my skin, and the very mention of their names has made me absolutely crazy. There was a guy who stole my act, my yo-yo act, and performed it at the Renaissance Festival and invited me to come see the act. And I didn't know what it was. I went there and he did my act in front of hundreds of people every day for the Renaissance Festival. And I've heard he still does my act, parts of it, verbatim. After he did my act, he came down and said, "Hey, Mo, flattery is the best. What is it? Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery." And I was just stunned. And I knew the sword swallower who was nearby, sweet guy. And he said, "Hey, how'd you like your act?" And he was being sarcastic, of course, but he was very serious. And I said, I can't believe it. He said, "Well, we don't want to be the one to tell you." And I was like, and just the mention of that guy raised my blood pressure for years and years and years and years. And then you just have to say, it was a good act. And the poor guy didn't have the ingenuity to do his own thing. There was another guy, and he just annoyed me because he could never really be genuine and never could be, I don't know what the word is, gracious, that's the word, about my contribution to his career. And then I realized, you know what? So what? That's my ego talking. And I realized that, and I was able to let go of it. It took a little while. See, it's all about discovering who you are in the long run and saying, it's okay. And honestly, man, it's a nice feeling to realize that it's okay. Because in the long run, phew, you let go of all that stuff, and it's like sitting on a porch on a beautiful day with a glass of lemonade in your hand, watching shapes in the clouds. It really is. Nice rocking chair, too. All right, that's enough. That is more than enough of that. There's no time. No time. Ain't no time for hate, barely time to wait. Uncle John's Band, Grateful Dead, Working Man's Dead album. Okay, till next week, I wish you all peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.